Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Murders of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor are finally receiving national media attention, but why has it taken so long? On February 23rd, Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man, was out for a jog in his hometown of Brunswick, Georgia. A New York Times piece published on April 26th reads like this, quote, Ahmaud Arbery loved to run. It was how the 25-year-old former high school football standout stayed fit. And it was not unusual to see him running around the outskirts of the small coastal Georgia city near where he lived. During his run, Ahmaud was being followed by two white men, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis McMichael, who shot and killed him shortly after. According to a police report filed the day of the shooting, Gregory McMichael said he thought Ahmaud Arbery looked like a man suspected of a recent burglary. So he and his son decided to grab their weapons and began chasing Ahmaud Arbery. Ahmaud was not armed. He was shot to death in the daytime outside on his routine jog. Arbery's father, Marcus Arbery, said, quote, Ahmaud just loved people. He's the kind of young man that if he had a dollar and you asked for him for that dollar, he would give it to you. His heart was just bigger than life, end quote. Ahmaud Arbery would have turned 26 on May 8th. Last week, on May 5th, an attorney for Arbery's family released a video that shows the fatal shooting. The video went viral, sparking outrage online. But for the 10 weeks following Ahmaud's death on February 23rd, nothing happened. No arrests were made. After the shooting, Brunswick Judicial Court District Attorney Jackie Johnson recused herself from the case, citing a conflict of interest because she previously worked with Gregory McMichael. Now, Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr is asking the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to look into the actions of two district attorneys and how they handled the case. Federal investigators are also being asked to investigate the case. We should say that the two men, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis McMichael, were finally arrested on May 7th. And then there's the case of Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old black woman who was sleeping in her home in Louisville, Kentucky on March 13th when police officers barged in and shot her to death. According to a lawsuit filed by Taylor's family, Louisville Metro Police Department executed a narcotics-related search warrant in the wrong home. Her family is demanding justice and answers. Breonna Taylor was a certified EMT who had two jobs at hospitals in Louisville. On today's Your Call, we are getting reaction to these latest murders and talk more broadly about racism in the U.S. nearly a decade after the Black Lives Matter movement began. Today, we are joined by Ron Davis. On November 23, 2012, Ron lost his 17-year-old son, Jordan Davis, in a senseless murder. Jordan and his friends stopped at a Jacksonville, Florida gas station when a 45-year-old white man, Michael Dunn, got into an argument with them because their music was just too loud. Michael Dunn took out a gun and shot and killed Jordan, who was unarmed. In October 2014, Michael Dunn was sentenced to life without parole. Jordan Davis's story is told in the documentary, 3.5 minutes, 10 bullets. And we have had Ron on several times talking about and remembering his son, Jordan. Hi, Ron. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you so much for joining us, Ron. It's great to hear you.
Same here.
We're also joined by two youth with the Teens on Target program from Youth Alive. That's an Oakland-based organization that trains and supports young people to reduce violence in their communities. Seven Curley is a senior at Fremont High School in Oakland. Seven has been a participant in Teens on Target for 3 years. As a youth leader, she's mentored at middle schools in her neighborhood and has done public speaking. She was born in Oakland and has lost several family members to violence. Hi, Seven. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, can you hear me?
I think we can hear you okay. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
We're also joined by Greg Hampton, a senior and student athlete at Castlemont High School in Oakland. Greg has been a participant in Teens on Target for almost 4 years. As a youth leader, he has mentored students at over 6 middle schools, and he's spoken on panels across the nation. Born and raised in Oakland, Greg has lost friends and loved ones to gun violence. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. Ron, I want to start off with you. Like I said, we had you on many times talking about the tragic murder of your son, Jordan. And I just have to ask you, what was your response when you saw the video about what happened to Ahmaud Arbery?
In a word, I was crushed. You know, I spoke to the local networks here. And, you know, for this, at the time, 25-year-old to be jogging in February, you know, and then to get murdered like he did and nothing happened. And, you know, it took a public outcry for him to even, for his killers to even be arrested. And that was just appalling to me.
Mm. Ron, you're in touch with a number of families who have lost their young children, black children, to gun violence. What are you hearing from the people that you have been in touch with?
You know, they are looking at this as another Trayvon Martin type event where the local police, because of their relationship with the killers, are not going to immediately arrest this person for the shooting of Ahmaud. And so, you know, you have a former police officer, and then he became a investigator for the district attorney's office. He actually had an office inside the office where the district attorney is, and his son. So anybody else would have been arrested for this shooting and to see, you know, during trial whether he was innocent or guilty. But because of the relationship, he wasn't even arrested, him nor his son. And, you know, they start talking about laws again, like the Georgia Citizens Arrest Law. And, you know, they try to compare that with the Stand Your Ground Law. But in Georgia Citizen Arrest Law, it says, you know, that the crime must be witnessed or you must have immediate, you know, knowledge of a crime before you go and confront someone. And they didn't immediately have knowledge of any crime because he had not committed any crime, you know. If he looked into a house that was under construction, true enough, they could cite him for trespassing, which that's a misdemeanor. So, again, in Georgia, misdemeanor, you can't falsely hold anybody and perform a citizen's arrest on a misdemeanor. So they were wrong all the way around, no matter how they try to spin it, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and I just watched a video, Ron, of Ahmaud basically walking kind of past the garage of a home that is being built. You know, and I was just talking with some friends who said, yeah, people have done that. You're curious. You look around. Right. A lot of people do that. And the man who owns the home has been interviewed in the media saying, you know, that he didn't take anything. It's really incredible. The man who owns the home said he did not call the police. Someone else called the police. I mean, Ron, what are your thoughts about this? Again, this happens in February, and the McMichaels, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis, are not arrested until May 7th.
Well, you know, it happens in a lot of, especially southern cities. There was an incident not long ago in Georgia. I don't know if you remember the Hannah Payne. She was a 22-year-old, and this happened last year in suburban Atlanta, where this black man had a fender bender, okay? And he had a diabetic episode, and so he decided to drive off. Well, this white woman that was 22 years old, which had nothing to do with the accident, she saw the accident, and she chased him down in her Jeep. This was in Atlanta. And so she blocked him, and then she called 911. They told her to stay in her car. She jumps out of her car, goes over to the guy's window, and he rolls down the window, and she has a gun in one hand, and she punches him in the face. And she pulls the gun out on him, you know, all while this is being recorded because she dialed 911. And this is a 62-year-old black man. He was a mechanic. And she told him to get out his truck. And so she ends up shooting him while he's in the truck. He steps out and dies. And she's now facing murder charges because, number one, they told her not to, you know, confront him because it was just a misdemeanor fender bender. And the second thing is she ran out and, again, accosted him, tried to make a citizen's arrest, and shot and killed this man. And she had nothing to do with it. And so these are the things that we have to stop. people trying to make citizens' arrests when they don't know what's going on. They're not lawyers. They're not police. And you make citizens' arrests and make mistakes, and you end up killing somebody or killing someone's loved one, all because you say that you're trying to become a police officer, be a citizen arrest. And so we have to knock these laws out. A lot of the people are trying to get rid of these laws. I know California allows its citizens to arrest for a misdemeanor, even if the person did not directly witness it. Now, that's a California law that's on the books right now. And so, you know, we have to get rid of some of these laws.
Ron, and in the case of Gregory McMichael and his son Travis McMichael, I mean, they decided that they were going to grab a gun and then drive after Ahmaud as he was jogging.
That's amazing because, you know, when somebody's jogging, you basically have shorts on, you have tennis sneakers on, and you got a little T-shirt on. So they know good and well he was not armed, okay? So it wasn't like, and again, keep in mind, Rose, that it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Daylight, sun's out. So it's not like it's dark and you don't know what the person has or whatever. So, and they drive past him and block him. So they have already driven past him, so they know that he has no weapon on him. They can see that all he's doing is jogging. So there was no way, no right for them to pull a weapon on him at that point. And so, but my fear is this, is that if they don't get a change of venue, that these two are going to walk because of the relationships they have in that community and with the district attorneys and two district attorneys in the community. And it's going to be hard for the family, Wanda Cooper and Marcus Aubrey, it's going to be hard for them to get justice, I think, in that community. I think that the lawyers, which they have two great lawyers, they have Lee Merritt, which is the lawyer for the mother for Wanda Cooper, and they have Ben Crump, which is the lawyer for Marcus Aubrey, and they have great lawyers, but I think, in my opinion anyway, that they should try to get it out of that neighborhood because they just have, these two guys have too many ties in that neighborhood. That's why they were not arrested. Mm.
That is Ron Davis on November 23rd, 2012. Ron lost his 17-year-old son, Jordan Davis, in a senseless murder at a Jacksonville, Florida gas station when a white man asked Jordan and his friends to turn down their music because it was too loud. He took out a gun and shot at the car and killed Jordan, who is unarmed. And I hope you can take some time to watch the documentary, 3.5 minutes, 10 bullets. It's about Jordan and his case, but it also really gives you a behind-the-scenes look at how the system actually works. And this is something that we don't usually see on a daily basis, a regular basis, and we'll talk with Ron about that later in the show. I want to go to our young guests. Greg Hampton. Greg, you're a student athlete at Castlemont High School in Oakland, and I just wonder first, what was your reaction when you saw this horrific video?
To be honest, my reaction was just like how Ron said. I was horrified. I couldn't believe that happened to him, especially the background. I didn't know that they thought that he was a burglar. Like, in my opinion, I feel like if they were going off the assumption that he was a burglar, then why would a burglar be jogging down the street in sports uniform with regular, like, basically out there, and he just robbed him? Like, I feel like that was a dumb excuse. I feel like that they knew their intentions. They wanted to go there because they felt like that he didn't belong in their neighborhood. Even though he's been doing it every morning since he's been living there, I feel like that they just felt like they just had the need. They wanted to go and harass him, and it ended up killing the man. And for the fact that it took so long for them to be arrested, I also feel like that it's having to do with them, how well they are in the community. When it comes down to certain situations like that, if you're very known in your community and you're a white man, if you committed a crime like that, they don't automatically just jump up and just go arrest. They take time. They try to figure out if it was really them. They try to go to their intentions to try and see how they could get out of it. So I feel like that was very wrong, and I feel like that the way they handled it to the point where it took them till May 7th to arrest them too, I feel like that was wrong. I feel like they were just wasting time to figure out what they can do to try to get them out of it. I feel like that Ahmaud is not getting justice out of this. I feel like that they're going to try to, I don't know the word to put it, they're going to try to rug the case to the point where they don't get charged for it. They don't get any penalties for it because of how long it took to arrest him. So I just feel like that he's not getting any justice for what happened to him, and that's wrong. Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of concern about that. What about you, Seven? What was your reaction when you saw the video?
I think that is really messed up. I feel like no one should have to worry about y'all considering neighborhood and having to worry about looking over their shoulders and making sure that they're safe, and instead of being targeted because of the color of their skin.
So many articles have been written about this. And Gregory, there was a piece about, you know, what it's like to run as a black person. Last week on Ahmaud's birthday, thousands of people around the country and around the world shared the hashtag I Run With Maud, and they walked or ran 2.23 miles to honor the date of his death. The hashtag now has more than 60,000 posts on Instagram. There was a story in the New York Times called The Fatal Shooting of Ahmaud Arbery Stirs More Running While Black Anxiety. Then there was a piece in Outside Magazine by Allison Dazier. And she's a runner. She's a black mom. And she wrote, quote, "This case is exactly why we never go running alone at night. This is why we fear wearing masks to cover our faces, even though we know it's to protect us from another deadly threat, COVID-19. She went on to say, "The truth is, when I go for a run as a black woman, that in and of itself is a political act and one that puts me at risk fearing for my life." Greg, a number of people in the New York Times piece shared similar concerns. What are your thoughts as a young black man who's an athlete?
I feel scared every day. You know, when it comes to football, being on a varsity team, you're going to automatically be late because your games start at 7 and they end at 10. So when it comes to, like, football practice and football games, I always got to be aware of my surroundings when I'm going to my football games and when I'm going to practice, because I never know who's watching me when I go there. I stay in even though I stay in Deep East Oakland, there are still people out there that are looking at you a certain way and not look like they – you basically look like a target every time you look outside. So every time I went to football practice, I would always watch my surroundings. I would always be with a group of people, with a group of my friends, with a group of my football players, just to feel safe, because I felt like that if I were to be alone in a certain situation like that were to happen, I wouldn't know how to carry it. I wouldn't know how to react. I would automatically, like, be on guard and wouldn't know how to handle the situation through my words. I would automatically want to fight. So I feel like that being a young black man and being an athlete, I have to still watch my surroundings, even though I'm trying to do good and not trying to be in the streets. I still got to make sure that everybody knows my face. Like, I wear glasses a lot. Even though I wear glasses a lot, I never have a hood on like that, because I automatically look like a target because I'm always wearing glasses. So I got to make sure that I always have my hood off. I always make sure that everybody sees my face, so when I'm walking past, nobody suspects me. I make sure that I'm with friends that everybody just makes sure that they're not covered up to the point where we look suspicious. So basically what I'm saying is I'm always watching my surroundings. I'm always making sure that I don't have anybody following me. I'm always making sure that everybody that sees me and doesn't see somebody that looks suspicious, because in my community there is a lot of violence going on. There's a lot of burglaries going on. It's a lot of things going on to the point where if they were to see me wearing a hood and having glasses on and being the size that I am and being an athlete, they will automatically suspect me as a suspect. So I have to make sure that they don't do that, so I do feel safe, so I do make it home to my mom. So I am able to walk outside and go chill with friends. So I'm able to go the football practice, because one day you never know who's watching you. You never know what their intentions are. So I just got to make sure that I'm on guard on the right type of way, not the wrong type of way.
Greg, how do you process this? I mean, when you get home after practice and, you know, you go to bed and you're able to kind of take a deep breath and think about the day, how do you process all of this?
I don't really think about it too much, because I feel like that will overtake my emotions and make me not want to join play football and not want to, like, go outside like that. So I don't really think about the targets. I'm just aware. I just know that when I walk outside that I'm aware of my surroundings. I just make sure that everybody sees me. I'm just making sure that everybody knows that it's me and not nobody else. I don't really trip too hard off of it, because if I do that, then I'm going to always be looking around. I'm going to always making sure that whoever walks past me doesn't turn around and try to do anything. Then that's going to cause more commotion, because everybody thinks that it's me, something wrong with me, while I'm trying to make sure that there's nothing wrong with them to where they do something bad. So I just got to keep it on the low to make sure that nobody really suspects it, but I make sure that it's to the point where I know, like, who's around me, and I know that I know everybody. So I just make sure that everybody sees me and I see them.
Ron Davis, what goes through your mind when you hear Greg share his experiences? I mean, so much needs to change in society to ensure that young black men like Greg don't have to deal with this on a daily basis.
You're right, and I'm tired of him having to deal with that. You know, there's a writing that's circulating across the country in black neighborhoods. I don't know if you've seen a message called Tired, Rose?
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm going to read it, and it's not going to take but a minute, but I want all your listeners to really listen to this. Black people are so tired. We can't go jogging, hashtag Ahmaud Arbery. We can't relax in the comfort of our own homes, hashtag Botham John, Atiana Jefferson. We can't ask for help after being in a car crash, hashtag Jonathan Farrell, Renisha McBride. We can't have a cell phone, hashtag Stephon Clark. We can't leave a party to get to safety, hashtag Jordan Edwards. We can't play loud music, hashtag Jordan Davis. We can't sell CDs, hashtag Alton Sterling. We can't sleep, hashtag Ayanna Jones. We can't walk from the corner store, hashtag Mike Brown. We can't play cops and robbers, hashtag Tamir Rice. We can't go to church, hashtag Charleston 9. We can't walk home with Skittles, hashtag Trayvon Martin. We can't hold a hairbrush while leaving our own bachelor party, hashtag Sean Bell. We can't party on New Year's, hashtag Oscar Grant. We can't get in a normal traffic ticket, hashtag Sandra Bland. We can't lawfully carry a weapon, hashtag Philando Castile. We can't break down on a public road with car problems, hashtag Corey Jones. We can't shop at Walmart, hashtag John Crawford. We can't have a disabled vehicle, hashtag Terrence Crutcher. We can't read a book in our own car, hashtag Keith Scott. We can't be a 10-year-old walking with our grandfather, hashtag Clifford Glover. We can't decorate for a party, hashtag Claude Reese. We can't ask a cop a question, hashtag Randy Evans. We can't cash our check in peace, hashtag Yvonne Smallwood. We can't take out our wallet, hashtag Amadou Diallo. We can't run, hashtag Walter Scott. We can't breathe, hashtag Eric Garner. We can't live, hashtag Freddie Gray. We're tired, tired of making hashtag, tired of trying to convince you that our hashtag Black Lives Matter too. Tired of dying, tired, tired, so very tired.
Ron, where did you get this so others can share it?
Someone sent it, and I'll make sure you get a copy of it.
Please do. I mean, I've seen we're tired on social media for years, but that really needs to be shared. I mean, I just looked this up, and I found a few of them, but I'd love to get the entire list.
Okay. I'll make sure you get it.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Ron Davis. He's the father of Jordan Davis, who was shot and killed by a white man in Jacksonville, Florida. Jordan and his friends were at a gas station parking lot. Michael said their music was too loud. He ended up shooting at the car. and killing Jordan. We've had Ron on many times to talk about and remember his son. Their story is told in a documentary, 3.5 minutes, 10 bullets. We're also joined by two youth with the Teens on Target program from Youth Alive in Oakland, Seven Curley, Greg Hampton. They both do incredible work in their community, and they both have lost loved ones to gun violence. Today, we are talking about the murders of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. They are finally receiving national media attention, but why has it taken so long? Ahmaud was killed and murdered on February 23rd, and then Breonna was killed on March 13th, and only now are their cases finally receiving national media attention. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the murders of not only Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, but so many, as Ron Davis just listed. We can't decorate for a party, hashtag Claude Reese. We can't ask a cop a question, hashtag Randy Evans. The list goes on and on and on. If you'd like to join us, if you have any thoughts to share, reaction, I mean, we do so many shows about what needs to change. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Seven, you're a senior at Fremont High School in Oakland. You're really active with the Teens on Target program for Youth Alive. What went through your mind when Ron was reading that long list?
I feel like it can really go on and on, like with society today. I feel like everything is not going to change. It's just the list is going to get longer and longer and longer. Like a couple weeks ago, someone just got killed from walking around in Walmart eating chips. The man was unarmed. He didn't want to harm nobody. And they tased the man, and they continued to kill him. And I feel like that's wrong.
What about you, Greg? What went through your mind when you were hearing Ron list the names of Black people who've been shot and killed?
I feel like Seven said, that list goes on and on. I feel like that's a very powerful message that he read. I feel like that should be put out to more, like, that should be put more, spreaded wide, more nationwide, because I feel like people need to hear that. There are a lot of powerful messages out there. That would be one of them, to get it through people's head that no matter how many people you kill, no matter how many Black people die, we're still standing up for ourselves. The Black movement is still going on. Not all of us are bad people. Messages like that go out there and people don't look at it because they feel like that's not us. They don't know us for us. They just see that what's on the news. They just see that, oh, young Black men are killing each other each and every day. Black people are killing each other each and every day. We're very aggressive. We don't have any morals. We don't have nothing like that. And that's not the case, because I'm a young Black man. I'm an oversized Black man. I'm 5'9", and I'm 200-something pounds. And if I go outside and just go out there, people still think that I'm a big target. So even though that's not the case, I'm a very nice person. I'm a very respectful young man that's not about the streets. I'm about my schoolwork. Teens on Target-wise, they help me a lot when it comes down to things like that. So when you think about a message like that, you have to know the meaning by it. You can't just read a message like that and just go bypass. You have to let it marinate in your mind. You have to let it you have to think about it before you just automatically assume what it means. You got to really take meaning behind it, because you may assume one thing and it means a different. It means something else.
You know, and Greg, of course you know this, but it's so wrong that you feel that you even have to say, you know, I'm a larger Black man, but I'm a good guy. I'm a nice guy. I'm doing good things in my community.
Yeah.
Ron, what would you say to that? It's just so sad on many levels that Greg even has to say these things.
I know. I am 67. And so when I'm speaking, I'm trying to save people like Greg, you know, and the young people out there that are just starting their life and starting their careers, and why do they have to duck and dodge all the time? You know, these laws are on the books, like this Georgia Citizens Arrest Law stems from like 1863, you know, the Civil War era, you know, and a lot of, and Georgia's not the only state with this kind of law. You know, you have states across the country. Why don't we abolish these laws? Get rid of these old laws that we don't need anymore. because all they do is create havoc, you know, when somebody does something wrong, and it gives them the ability to think that they're going to be covered for wrong behavior. You know, just like Michael Dunn had killed Jordan. He thought he was going to be okay for wrong behavior. He didn't even think he should have gotten arrested. And he ends up spending the rest of his life in prison, life without parole in prison, because he thought that he could get away with it. And so some of these laws, you know, that are designed back in the 1800s were designed to protect those that needed protecting back then. Well, we have police now. We have detectives now. We have the FBI now. We don't have to have these laws on the book, but they're still on the book. And these citizens have to stop with these guns because of the fact that, yeah, we know you love your guns. And I know that you're not going to get rid of your guns. Or, you know, you've told me loud and clear, you know, when I went to the Capitol, you've told me loud and clear. However, what you have to understand is this. You have to learn how to use your guns and not use them as if you're part of the police force. And that's what the problem is across this country. Every citizen with a gun thinks that they're part of the police force. And what's going to happen, and I'm going to tell you long term, is that African Americans and people of color of this country are going to get more than sick and tired of seeing the reports every single day of black and brown people being killed, unarmed, being killed. We are going to start arming ourselves. Me, everybody else, every black person, I'm going to start advocating for that if we don't get this thing under control, that black people will have to start arming themselves and not be a victim. And if America wants that, that's what America's going to get, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just out here advocating violence, but I'm saying we are sick and tired of being the people with an unarmed person being killed, our loved ones being killed, and they are unarmed, and the people are not being arrested, they're not going to jail, and we just pay off the families. In all these cities, everybody is paying off these black families, but still their loved ones are in the ground. And this has to stop. And the only things that are going to shake up the people that are using the guns, which are I call domestic terrorists, the white nation that think that they're nationalists, the only thing that's going to stop that is when they meet another force that have guns also. Then they'll stop doing it. And I hope that we don't have to come to that. But, Rose, we may have to come to that.
Mm. You know, Ron, I saw former members of the Black Panther Party and a biker group, a group of black bikers, were in Georgia armed. And I mean, I didn't read much about it. I just saw a video. But this is starting to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and people don't understand. When you see these videos of people going to the Capitol because of the pandemic, and they're not going to the Capitol with shirts and ties on and trying to have a conversation with local government and trying to see if they could reopen these cities. What are they doing? They're going to these capitals with rifles and handguns. Even one guy had a bazooka on his back. You know, they're going for violence, and they're going to try to push these states to reopen because they said that they're in charge of their state. You know, when they go into the store, they don't want to wear masks, even if the government tells you to wear masks. And they have violence in the stores because they don't want to wear masks. So this thing has gotten out of control. And they're doing it all because they have firearms. You know, get emboldened when they have a firearm. All of a sudden their chest is stuck out. And this is getting out of hand. And we need to have our lawmakers correct this because it's going to get worse than it is now.
Well, we're getting a lot of calls, but before we take calls, I want to make sure we spend some time talking about the murder of Breonna Taylor. Her case is finally now getting attention, and I'm just going to read from the Courier Journal. Criticism of Louisville Metro Police is mounting as national attention turns to the March 13th shooting death of Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old Louisville EMT killed in her own home. Police have said officers entered Taylor's home in the early morning hours as part of a narcotics investigation, with officers returning fire after one of the members was shot in the apartment. Defense attorney for Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, claims in court filings that Walker filed in self-defense, believing the home was being broken into because the police did not announce themselves. So Breonna Taylor was an EMT. She worked at two hospitals, and her family is saying that the police came to the wrong home. Seven, are you familiar with this case? This is only starting to get attention now.
I'm just now getting a picture from that case. I say about a couple days ago, I read about it.
You know, and I want to say, Seven, the thing that also is just so horrific about these cases, and Ron, I know you've got personal experience with this, is that there's a character assassination of these young black people who are murdered. In fact, this morning on CBS, I heard, you know, Ahmaud Arbery did not have drugs or alcohol in his blood. So this is the kind of thing that also happens after these murders. And so I just want to, let's just remember Breonna for a moment. In the Courier Journal, her aunt said that she became an EMT in 2017, loved her work as a nurse at Norton Healthcare, and she was an ER technician at the University of Louisville. Family members said she was hardworking and honest. Her aunt, Bianca, said she did not deserve to end her life so horrifically, and she loved her work as an EMT. Greg, are you familiar with this case?
At first I really wasn't, but 2 days ago I heard about it on the news.
Mm. I mean, Seven, what's your reaction to this? It's just, you know, another senseless murder, and we're only learning about it two months later.
I feel like they're purposely targeting black people for living their lives. Mm. I feel like they are, it's just hard to explain because it keeps on happening, and it's like it's really heartbreaking. As a black woman, you shouldn't have to worry about sleeping in your bed without police overusing their powers and killing you for no reason. That lady did not do nothing. She was just sleeping in her bed. Those people came inside her house looking for somebody that did not live there, that she was not with at the time.
Right, and like her. Oh, go ahead.
I feel like they're just killing people just to kill people.
The family said that the officers did not knock. They did not announce themselves. They heard a large bang on the door. When they inquired, there was no response, that people were outside the door. At this point, the door suddenly exploded. Counsel believes that police hit the door with a battering ram. This is according to Robert Eggert, who is defending the family. And I have to say, Greg and Seven, I mean, you know, we want to create this space for young people to talk about this, but to ask you over and over again, what is your response? What other questions do you think need to be asked at this point, Greg?
I feel like a question that needs to be asked is why are they doing this? What are their intentions when they are when something like this happens? Why did they do it? What possessed them to feel like they had the need to do it? And I feel like the final question would be, did they feel like they were doing the right thing when they did it? I feel like that people, when it comes down to the Ahmaud case and the Breonna case, I feel like that with the Ahmaud case, they didn't really have any intention when they did it. They just felt like that they needed to do it. I feel like it's normalized. Like, a lot of cases like this have happened. Trayvon Martin, a lot of other young black men have died to cases like this, and their justice has not been served. So I really, like, the questions that need to be asked are, why are you doing this? What are your intentions by this? What are you getting out of this? Like, does this make you feel better? Does this make you feel like you're doing justice? A lot of other questions have brought to my mind, but I can't really say it on the radio. So I just feel like that they don't really have no morals when they do it. Like I've been saying, they don't really have any intentions. They just feel like that they feel like what they're doing is right, especially the police. With the Breonna case, I feel like that the police felt like they were doing justice because I don't really know the backstory behind the case, but I feel like that their intentions weren't what they say they were. They feel like they were doing the right thing. When that's not the case, because if you were doing the right thing, she wouldn't have died. If you were doing the right thing, you would have looked back and you would have seen you were at the wrong home. With Ahmaud, I feel like that they felt like that they were doing the right thing when the case was. If you were doing the right thing, you should have did more background on what was the burglary like. If you were doing the right thing, you wouldn't have jumped to conclusions and just followed him while he were jogging. If you're doing the right thing, why would he be jogging if he just committed a burglary? So I feel like the questions that need to be asked aren't being asked, and that's why they're getting away with these cases.
And Ron, according to the Courier Journal, the only reason why Breonna Taylor's case is getting national attention is because the prominent activist Sean King posted about her story on social media.
Yeah, Sean King is great with Daily News. And also, you know, they hired prominent attorney Ben Crump also, the same attorney that Marcus Aubrey hired. So that family has Ben Crump as their attorney also, the family of Breonna Taylor. And so that's why it's getting attention. But another thing, according to Sky News, is that the suspect they were looking for was already in custody. So they were wrong even going into the house to begin with. That, you know, if they had checked all their sources, they would find that the person they were looking for was already in custody. Right. And, you know, and I also read that she was shot 8 times. See, that's another thing. They make sure you're dead so you can't tell the tale, you know. When you see these shootings, usually these victims are not shot one or two times. They usually shot a whole lot of, at least 5 times or so. You know, when you look at Walter Scott, how many times that gun fired? 6 times when he was running away from the policeman. And when you look at Mike Brown, how many times was he shot? When you start looking at Laquan McDonald in Chicago, 12 times. You know, all these kids are being shot multiple times by the police to make sure that they are dead so they can't tell the story. And that's what I'm seeing also, is the amount of times that these victims are being shot.
We have an email from Catherine who says, I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, European-American woman. I'm using this as a point of reference. What am I doing right now? Crying. Before that, when Ron started reading the list, shock. Before that, during the show, alarm. Thank you for having this show. Well, thank you for the email, Catherine. And let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Lamont in San Francisco. Hi, Lamont. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm listening to the broadcast, and I'm just completely unnerved because many of these instances have happened to me right here in San Francisco. Just 2 weeks ago, I was out riding my bike through Golden Gate Park, and I passed a woman. I blew my horn, saying that my bell, that I was on the left side of her, and she chased me down, insisting that I stay away from her. And I was frightened for my life. I almost got hit by a car trying to outrun her as she was telling me to stay away from her, and I was ahead of her. I'm a 55-year-old African-American male in the city, and I'm afraid to go into most stores. I'm afraid to go into Walgreens. I'm afraid to go into a restaurant. I'm afraid to go pretty much any of these places because I just don't know how I'm going to be treated on the other side. And sometimes it's not worth the gamble. It's not worth my pride, my sense of confidence being crushed over these instances. So many times I thrive through our city of San Francisco, right here in our city of San Francisco, right here with our black mayor, our black mayor that we've had 10 years, 20 years ago. And I'm afraid for my life most of the time because I just don't know. I've seen passive aggressiveness over the silliest things where I'm assumed that I'm a servant. And if I'm in one of these boutique grocery stores, people think that I'm there as a personal shopper and not there to personally shop for myself. I've been told that. I've been asked that. Are you here to shop for someone else? That chips away at my pride. That chips away at my self-confidence. If I speak up, it's a problem. If I don't speak up, it's a problem. I don't know what the solution is to this. I really don't. It just seems this is entrenched in the psyche of us as Americans, this race status thing that we have to endure on a day-to-day basis. We're inundated by guns. We watch Star Wars and think that's the greatest thing ever, people shooting at each other in a glorified, entertaining way. And then it happens on our street corner, and now we're afraid. Guns are a huge part of our life in every aspect. You can't watch any TV show without a gun being associated with it, from cartoons. So this is part of our psyche. So I think it's very easy for individuals to just feel like they have the right to be a vigilante, even if you have a badge and mandated by the state to do it or the city to do it, or a civilian that feels that they have the right. And they do. This Constitution backs it up, that they have the right. But you don't have the right to kill me. So when I heard that case last week, I surrendered and I just got in bed for the rest of the day because I'm like, this is me. I listen to many of your broadcasts, Rose, and And it's not just a statistic. You're talking about me. Mm. When these authors have written these books, they're talking about me. It's not just some figure on the other side of town or the other side of the country. And I tell this to my husband all the time. They're talking to me. I'm the target. I am the blackmail they're talking about. I am the statistic. I'm not just a number. I am that person. I look in the mirror. They're talking about my life. And so I don't know what the solution is to all of this, because all I'm doing is living. I'm riding my bike, and it's a threat to someone. I walk into a grocery store. I walk into Buy-Rite, and I'm treated a certain way. I walk into Gus's, I'm treated a certain way. I walk down the street, people... So I don't know what the solution is, because this is part of the spirit and the psyche of our fellow Americans. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's any law to clear this away, because these are people. And right here in our city, we always talk about the Midwest and the Deep South. But remember, a lot of our folks come from the Deep South and come from different parts of the world, and they bring their biases with them.
Right.
So I fear for us. I fear for us. I fear for the black that kill black, because that's a huge conversation too. And I fear for people like myself, people that have some color in their skin and just trying to live and thrive, because we can't do anything. And that's proven. And then we have to be villainized because, you know, like I heard that same thing that you heard, Rose, that CBS said about that young man, that he had no drugs or alcohol in his system. So what? So if he did.
Right.
But again, they're trying to villainize and say, this is why he deserved to die. And that's what this is, and that's the narrative that we hear. So it gives people like those gentlemen, those monsters in Georgia, the right to keep doing what they're doing. And the sad thing is, there's going to be a million people in America that are going to donate their money to those gentlemen to help with their loss, their legal case. And so that shows you as well, because there's people that are applauding right now and saying, yes, that's right, stand up for our country. And that's the sad thing too. So it's I don't see a solution to this. I think it's just an honest conversation that we all have to have and keep having, and hopefully people will come and rise to the occasion of looking at this from a conscious, psychological, and a health crisis as well in our country. So thank you for presenting this, and the conversation should never stop, because it's an ongoing thing. And I just know when I step outside my door, I question if I'm going to make it back to my home just for thriving, trying to live in our city of San Francisco. The other stuff,
Lamont,
I'm not worried about. Yes.
Lamont, would you stay on the line? We'd love to get your number to have you on a future show if you're interested.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story, and we'll continue doing shows about this. I mean,
things are developing, and I would like him to actually send a message. You know, when you get his number, send a message to me. I mean, Rose, you have my email and everything. I'm go ahead and letting you send a message to him, because I'd like to talk to him further. A lot of his conversation was breaking up. I don't know if you noticed it on your end, but I couldn't hear a lot what he was saying. But I'm interested to speak with him. So if you could make sure that happens.
Sure.
Another thing I just want to say quickly is that Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, because of what happened with the Arbery case, she called that a lynching. Mm. She, you know, that was reported. You know, she's the daughter of Major Lance, who was an R&B singer, and she became mayor of Atlanta. And, you know, I just want to give thanks to people. Like, we just lost a person that was an activist and that toured the country with me, and that did a lot for black and brown people all around the country. Erica Gordon Taylor, who headed the Mamie Till Mobley Foundation, and she got the anti-lynching law approved in the House in Congress. And so now it's going to the Senate, an anti-lynching law. And so we need this law to come into effect to stop all this from happening. People have to start paying consequences for what they do.
Well, just to let you know, Ron, Lamont was just talking about what it's like in San Francisco, where, you know, even in Golden Gate Park at nice grocery stores, for example, he's profiled, a woman yelled at him. They think that he works there. He just said he just doesn't feel safe, even in a city like San Francisco, when he leaves the house. I wanted to also just get final thoughts from Seven and Greg. Greg, you both work on gun violence prevention. Are there any other laws that you would like to see passed? And we only have about a minute left.
To be honest, I feel like that no matter what laws are being put out there, they're not going to help my community and many other communities. I feel like that, like I was speaking on this just a few weeks back, I feel like that if you're going to make a law to try to help us become better and try to put down gun violence, you need to understand why there's so much gun violence being put on. I feel like that they need to connect with the communities that are dealing with such gun violence and try to get a better understanding, so when they make the law, they know that the law is going to help. These past laws aren't helping us at all because the gun violence rate is still going up. And I feel like that's not good. I feel like that they're making laws that's trying to help everybody when that's not the case. Even though everybody's going through gun violence, people are going through it more than others. So I feel like if you're going to make a law to try to help everybody deal with gun violence, you need to find the source to understand why there's so much gun violence happening to where you could prevent it instead of making an increase, because the gun laws that are trying to help isn't helping at all. I feel like that these recent gun laws that have been put in place aren't helping because there's still a large amount of gun violence in my community at that. I feel like that if you really want to help us, you need to connect with us. Don't just try to assume that assume that you're helping us when you're not. You're making things, I wouldn't say worse, but you're not making it better. This gun violence in my community is normalized. Like, I hear gunshots almost every night, and it's to the point where I don't even get scared. I don't go for my mom for help. I just sit there and I just continue to watch TV, and that's not healthy. As a young black man, you can't just say that, oh, I grew up in, I'm trying to help. Like, Teens on Target is trying to help with gun violence, but we can't do that if lawmakers are not helping, trying to understand with us.
And Greg, sorry to cut you off, but we are out of time. We're going to do another show specifically about that. And we will continue this conversation. Lamont, thank you again for calling in. We definitely are going to get in touch with you to be on a future show. We've been joined by two youth with Teens on Target at Youth Alive, Seven Curley and Greg Hampton, and Ron Davis, who lost his 17-year-old son, Jordan, on November 23rd, 2012. Thank you all so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.